Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram's oil report for Saturday, August 3rd. Countdown to Matterhorn Express extended to October. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Permian Basin natural gas producers hoping for a boost from opening of the Matterhorn Express pipeline will have to wait a bit longer. East Daily Analytics had expected the 2.5 billion cubic feet per day line to begin seeing volumes in July, ramping up to full capacity by September. But a revised construction schedule from the contractor building the project has pushed the timing back to October. Quote, "It keeps Waha lower for longer, at least a couple of more months," said Rob Wilson, senior director at East Daly, referring to the natural gas header in Reeves County that has seen natural gas prices go negative numerous times since spring. Quote, "It does change the timing. I expect Waha to trade as it has been. April was bad. May was worse with maintenance on the Gulf Coast Express. The price will stay low until October," he told the Reporter-Telegram by telephone. Wilson said the change in timing for the Matterhorn came from an update by the contractor, Gulf Companies. The contractor updated a list of projects and posted a fourth quarter 2024 completion target for Matterhorn. That language has since been removed from the contractor's website, he noted. Quote, "The big story is when Matterhorn comes online. That will bring a big slug of supply to South Texas," Wilson said, continuing the trend of Permian flows saturating the South Texas market. Pipeline capacity from the Permian to South Texas will surge to 12 billion cubic feet per day when Matterhorn enters service, up threefold from capacity of just 3.4 BCF in early 2019. Wilson said the surge in Permian supply will put downward pressure on Houston ship channel bases. Additional flows from the Permian are expected to displace inbound supply from Carthage. His company forecast natural gas flows from Carthage to Houston by 2 to 3 BCF per day from 2024 to 2028 to balance the market, indicating Houston will trade at a discount to Henry Hub. Once the Matterhorn enters service, quote, "From a production standpoint, we expect it to grow substantially in the fourth quarter," said Wilson, noting that some operators are already planning to increase output at that time. For all the additional capacity Matterhorn will provide, Wilson expects the relief to be short-lived. Quote, "I think egress will tighten again in the second half of 2026. Matterhorn will alleviate constraints between now and then," he said. EPA certifies Flotek measurement technology. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Permian Basin oil and gas producers are working to adjust to new flaring regulations, and technology companies are working as hard to provide solutions. Flotek Industries announced this week the Environmental Protection Agency has designated the JP3 system, designed by its JP3 measurement subsidiary, as an approved measurement technology with respect to those new regulations. The optical instrument, designed for the precise measurement of net heating values, or NHV, and flare gases, is the first to be approved as an alternative method under the new source performance standards 0000B regulations. Quote, "We've been out in the Permian Basin doing measurements since last year," Thomas Redlinger, Vice President Data Analytics with Flotek, said. Speaking with the Reporter-Telegram by telephone, Redlinger said the company had been working with early adapters of the technology to help fine-tune the technology and understand what's needed to help users comply with the regulations. Quote, "It's annual sampling time now, so there are hundreds of people on the road taking a lot of samples," Redlinger said. "There are a lot of samples failing that shouldn't fail. Taking these samples is difficult," end quote. The standard is to take air samples manually twice a day for 14 consecutive days during flaring, he said. Barring difficulties taking the samples, the process could take 14 days or it could take 21 days, he said. Because this new system can dropped off, plugged in, and then after 14 days collected, the EPA was excited to the approval, end quote. Redlinger said the company talked with EPA representatives early in the year, submitted its package in May, and within 3 weeks received the designation. It helped that the company was able to provide centralized data, a decade's worth of relevant data. Quote, "The industry has indicated these are not easy measurements to take and is still struggling to find relevant comparisons. We try to make compliance as simple as possible," he said. Small operators don't have the staff to interpret the hundreds of pages of performance standards, and even larger companies may not have enough staff, he said. Companies may not fully understand the compliance standards, quote, "but they do understand a license to operate, the need to make the community assured that what they're doing is safe," Redlinger said. JP3's technology utilizes near-infrared spectroscopy to deliver accurate, autonomous, and continuous real-time flare emission measurements and is engineered to operate in challenging field conditions. Redlinger said he sees continuous monitoring as a way for operators to actually increase production. Under regulations known as Subpart W, continuous monitoring would give producers credits for efficient flaring. Having the JP3 analyzer would show that efficiency, allowing operators to increase production. Redlinger added that it also has the role in the growing trend towards using field gas. While it is cleaner, he said field gas can include contaminants that will harm engines in frack spreads. With a little adjustment, he said the technology could analyze the gas beforehand. Water Consortium, Natura, team up on power project. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. It takes energy to produce energy, and any Permian Basin oil and gas producer will acknowledge power costs comprise a large chunk of operating expenses and a significant challenge to ensure there is enough power. Energy is also required to operate the growing number of produced water treatment facilities that hope to provide water for producing operations and, ultimately, other industries and communities. A new partnership hopes to provide both energy and water. Under a partnership just announced between Natura Resources and the Texas Produced Water Consortium, the two entities will look at deploying Natura's liquid-fueled molten salt reactor technology to power the Permian Basin. Known as Fortifying the Future, the partnership hopes Natura's technology will provide additional sources of reliable, dispatchable energy paired with produced water treatment facilities to supply two new forms of critical resources for the state of Texas. Quote, "This provides opportunities not only for the oil field, but for Texas," said Doug Robison, founder and president of Natura Resources, speaking with the Reporter Telegram by telephone. Quote, "Treated produced water is really just a challenge of economics. How do we find the right size treatment process or processes that achieve environmentally safe quality water that are affordable enough to make building and operating the systems feasible?" Rusty Smith, executive director of the consortium, told the Reporter Telegram by email. Treating produced water with a thermal process is currently one of the leading options given the high average salinity of this water in the Permian Basin, Smith wrote. However, it is an energy-intensive process that drives up the cost of treatment and requires excess waste heat resources, he added. A liquid molten salt reactor can provide both thermal and electric energy and could prove to be one of the best options available to the industry to have reliable, dispatchable power for water treatment and other operational needs in remote areas. Robison reported that his company has received word from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission that its permit to construct a reactor on the Abilene Christian University campus. The reactor is expected to go online in 2025 or 2026, and the university will file with the NRC for a permit to operate the reactor. Receiving the permit, expected in September, is a huge accomplishment, Robison said. A veteran of the oil industry, Robison said he sees Natura's technology as a bridge between nuclear power and the oil and gas industry, quote, and how the two can work together, end quote. Railroad commissioner seeks flexibility in plugging grants. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Plugging as many orphaned wells as possible is a goal supported by both sides of the aisle. And earlier this month, testimony from experts invited by both the Republicans and Democrats told congressmen requirements in the Department of the Interior's grant program are hampering those efforts. Invited by Republicans, Railroad Commissioner Jim Wright testified in favor of House Resolution 7053, the Orphan Well Grant Flexibility Act, telling members of the House Committee on Natural Resources, requirements in the formula grant raise the cost to plug wells. Quote, "The methane monitoring requirements under the DOI's current formula grant increases the cost to plug these wells. For states with large orphan well populations, increasing plugging costs by 10% means that ultimately there will be 10% fewer wells plugged with these funds," he testified. That was echoed by Tara Rogers, director of the Super Hot Rock Energy Program at the Clean Air Task Force, who testified at the invitation of the Democrats. She testified that the grant, part of the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, provided an important tool to meet the orphaned well challenge. She urged the Department of the Interior, as it moves forward, to rethink their methane measurement requirements. While a worthy goal, quote, "requiring such measurements as part of IIJA funding could limit what can be achieved due to the cost of the measurement, upwards of $5,000 per well. Because the amount of funding under the IIJA is finite, spending more on measuring means spending less on well plugging, and thus fewer communities are afforded the benefits that result from reduced air and water contamination," she testified. Her organization prefers the more flexible approach supported by Wright and the Railroad Commission. Quote, some states may wish to use some of the funding they receive from a formula grant to measure every well. If that's the case, they should be allowed to make their choice in doing so, as permitted under the statute's original language. But if a state instead prefers, it should have room to coordinate with DOI, DOE, and other stakeholders to approximate emissions by sampling and using qualitative comparisons of wells, rather than always quantitatively assessing emissions from each emitting well, she testified. Wright also highlighted delays in Texas's ability to plug orphan wells caused by the Endangered Species Act and National Historic Preservation Act reviews. He told the committee Texas plugged a total of 730 wells with $25 million from the DOI's initial grant. But due to increased costs and delays from the reviews, the number of wells plugged with federal funds through the first 5 months of the subsequent formula grant was 60% lower than the wells plugged in the first 5 months of the initial grant. Quote, the delays Texas has experienced under the formula grant has significantly hindered our ability to plug orphan wells utilizing federal funds, Commissioner Wright noted. Continuing the quote, Texas plugged a total of approximately 730 wells with $25 million through the DOI's initial grant. Unfortunately, due to the increased costs and the extensive delays and reviews required by the DOI, the number of orphan wells plugged with federal funds through the first 5 months of the formula grant is 60% lower than what was plugged during the first 5 months under the initial grant, end quote. Discussing his testimony in a telephone interview, Wright told the reported Telegram, quote, these funds should be used to plug as many wells as possible, not technology to eliminate methane emissions or water concerns, end quote. There is no other technology available to address orphan wells but plugging, he said, and Texas knows how to plug wells, and we need the flexibility to do the job, end quote. Post Oak Minerals acquires $475 million in minerals and royalties. The story was written by Mella McEwen. In a week when almost $2 billion in asset acquisitions were announced, minerals and royalties were also on the market. Post Oak Minerals 5, an affiliate of Post Oak Energy Capital, has completed 10 acquisitions with a total value of over $475 million since the beginning of the year, primarily in the Permian Basin. The acquisitions include over 28,400 net royalty acres, or NRA, of mineral and royalty interests, of which 27,400 NRA are in the Permian Basin and the remainder in the Eagle Ford and Haynesville. Post Oak Minerals acquired about 24,000 NRA, 100% fee minerals in the Midland Basin from Apache Corporation and certain of its subsidiaries. Other sellers include Hunt Oil Company and other family offices and private individuals. Quote, mineral opportunities of this scale and quality in core areas of the Permian Basin with willing and reasonable sellers are relatively rare. It is even more difficult to find opportunities with multiple decades of remaining development potential, said Eric Madry, managing director of Post Oak Minerals, which will manage the acquired assets. In an email to the reporter Telegram, Madry said his company plans to hold the assets through their development life cycle and will actively manage the newly acquired assets alongside Post Oak's existing mineral and royalty investments. Post Oak views minerals as a long-duration investment, particularly in the Permian Basin, where the mineral owner owns rights to thousands of feet of stacked pay resource that will be developed over decades, he wrote. Post Oak Minerals currently oversees more than 80,000 net royalty acres of mineral and royalty interests, including the recent acquisitions, with approximately 50,000 NRA located in the Permian Basin. These assets are owned by multiple private institutional investment funds that are managed by Post Oak. Quote, Post Oak will integrate the newly acquired assets with the firm's broader mineral and royalty portfolio and focus on optimizing the portfolio where possible and through additional follow-on acquisitions that are accretive to the returns and asset quality of the existing investments, Madry wrote. Any follow-on acquisitions will predominantly be focused on substantially undeveloped acreage in target areas where Post Oak has specialized knowledge through its upstream investment activities, as well as Post Oak Minerals' current asset base, according to Madry. In addition to the Permian, Eagle Ford, and Haynesville assets recently acquired, Post Oak has also looked at other areas such as Appalachia and the Bakken. Quote, we firmly believe there is still meaningful runway of undeveloped resource in these basins that can be opportunistically captured using Post Oak's firm-wide experience and in-depth knowledge within each basin, Madry wrote. In general, he wrote, quote, I think the mineral and royalty market has become increasingly more sophisticated as the ownership interest has continued to change hands and be matched with the large influx of institutional capital, mostly private, over the last 10 years. Post Oak and other firms that have invested across the mineral and royalty space over the last 10-plus years have long viewed the asset class as differentiated and structurally advantaged, and we believe the mineral and royalty asset class will continue to develop positively and be viewed more positively by larger institutional investors.
Stepfather sentenced to 30 years in child's death by Kim Smith, OA News at OAOA.com. The stepfather of an 8-year-old child who was strangled to death in November 2022 was sentenced to 30 years in prison July 26th after pleading guilty to injury to a child by omission. Rodolfo Reyes, 35, was sentenced by Ector County District Court Judge Justin Lowe under the terms of a plea agreement worked out between prosecutors William Prasher and Carmen Tellez and defense attorney Scott Lay, court records show. According to an Ector County Sheriff's Office report, dispatchers received a call on November 5, 2022, about an unresponsive child from the 2000 block of North Huntington Avenue. And when deputies arrived, they found firefighters performing life-saving measures on Arturo Francisco Coca. Arturo was taken to Medical Center Hospital, but life-saving measures performed were unsuccessful. Investigators and hospital staff noticed Arturo appeared malnourished and small for his age, according to the report. They also saw he had lacerations on his head, legs, and back. Ector County Sheriff Mike Griffiths told the Odessa American the boy weighed 35 pounds. The boy's mother, Megan Lang, told authorities Arturo had woken up after defecating and urinating on himself, so she carried him back to the bathroom, bathed him, and took him into the living room, the report stated. She called 911, she said, because she was talking to him when his head fell back and she realized he wasn't breathing. Investigators learned through 6 other children in the home that Reyes was also home when the boy died, the report stated. Reyes acknowledged he was home the day Arturo died but denied hurting him, the report stated. He later requested legal counsel and didn't provide any other information. At the time, Griffiths said Lang and Reyes attributed two boys' death attributed the boy's death to diabetes, but forensic pathologists ruled the cause of Arturo's death was asphyxiation by manual strangulation with underlying causes of neglect. He found the boy to be malnourished and he saw hemorrhaging in his neck. Both were arrested on suspicion of capital murder of a child under the age of 10 and injury to a child. Reyes was later indicted on a single charge of injury to a child by omission. He was deemed incompetent to stand trial at one point and went through a competency restoration program. Last March, an Ector County jury found Lang, 30, guilty of capital murder, which carries an automatic life with no parole sentence. She was also convicted of injury to a child and injury to a child by omission, said Ector County District Attorney Dusty Galavan. The jury sentenced Lang to two life sentences on the child abuse charges. Galavan said she had been facing anywhere from 5 years to life on those counts, which will run concurrently to the no parole life sentence. According to court documents, Reyes wrote a letter to Lowe while awaiting trial saying he couldn't hold back all of the things Lang had done to Arturo. He claimed Lang often put a jalapeno or hot sauce on the boy's penis when he urinated on himself, put holes in the walls throughout their house by throwing Arturo at them, slap him in the face, and force him to sleep in a closet and sleep standing up. Reyes' father claimed Lang told Arturo she hated him and wished he'd die. County Judge presents at Bowie. OA News at OAOA.com. About 90 Bowie Middle School staff members got some professional development from someone outside their world Thursday. About 90 Bowie Middle School staff members got some professional development from outside their world Thursday. In the Bowie Library, Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett talked about leadership and his seven UPs. What he calls his leadership constitution. These are foundational principles that guide him and his framework as a person, a husband, and county judge. They are seven different things that are blank up, so they are easy for me to remember. But they are different tasks, different verbs that tell me actions that I need to do, that help me be better, that help me lead our county government better, that help me lead my family better, Fawcett said. He added that he has given the presentation a few times initially with fewer items than seven. The most recent presentation was at Ector County ISD's Leadership Academy. Bowie Principal Amy Russell was in the audience and decided to bring Fawcett to campus. Russell said she could think of several people Fawcett's adages could apply to. Fawcett's mom is Robin Fawcett, Human Resources Director for ECISD. I'm very comfortable being around folks who are teachers. I've grown up around teachers and school district staff. I feel very much at home with all of them. I really enjoy being here, he added. Russell said Fawcett's remarks resonated with her at Leadership University, and she felt her staff needed to hear it. She added that it's in line with Superintendent Scott Murray's Art of Reflection, which was the theme of Leadership University. School starts August 12th and 13th, so they have to be positive and let the community know we're doing this and we work together. Some of our kids might be in this court. We might have the same parents with the same kids, so I think showing the community that we're in this together, whether in education or in government, that we are here for ECISD students, Russell said. Russell said they will have Coach Diva Day talk about leading through detours from 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. August 6th. Ector County Judge Dustin Fawcett provides some professional development Thursday for staff at Bowie Middle School. He talked about leadership and his seven UPs, what he calls his leadership constitution. These are foundational principles that guide him with his framework as a person, a husband, and county judge. Ruth Campbell, Odessa American. Ector Principal returns to familiar territory. OA News at OAOA.com. Alejandra Garcia's career is coming full circle. Having started her career at Ector Middle School 10 years ago, she's now back at it as principal. This year also marks the school's return to the Ector County ISD fold, having been This year also marks the school's return to the Ector County ISD fold, having been run by Third Future Schools, a charter school network, the last 3 years. The charter was still in ECISD, but now it will be run by the district. Garcia's first year teaching has an eighth grade social studies teacher at Ector. It was exciting to be able to come back a decade later as principal, Garcia said. She also served as 7th grade assistant principal and 8th grade assistant principal at Ector. I was here for some time, and I was able to see both ends of it as a teacher and as an assistant principal. Now this year, I'm able to see it as the principal, said Garcia, who was previously principal at Travis Elementary. Plans are to repurpose Travis into a daycare center. Garcia said her experience heading the elementary campus will help her with Hector. It's definitely the same demographic of kids. We're going to get the same kids from fifth grade that come over here to sixth grade, so that's also going to be beneficial. Some of the kids in and seeing some familiar faces, she added. At Hector, she will have three assistant principals, a dean, and a principal fellow. Garcia is expecting 1,300 students, which was roughly the same number as the charter school had. Garcia said she is still in the process of getting everything ready for the new school year. Third Futures contract ended in June, and ECISD took over July 1st. It hasn't given us a lot of time. We're still in the process of hiring, getting everyone ready, and getting our fine art teachers to come and get everything back to where it is, she added. We're excited. We have several fine art teachers already hired. They have been here working, getting everything going, our athletes going as well. So I'm very optimistic that it's going to be a great transition back into the district, Garcia said. She will need about 95 teachers, as she was still looking for about 8 as of July 17th. We've done a good work this summer, Garcia said. Just a few of the teachers that worked for Third Future are coming back. She's looking forward to talking to students and parents to see what they enjoyed and what they're going to be happy to have back as part of ECISD. They also will be revamping the campus, painting the building to get it back in shape for a 9-period day. Hector has seen some benefits from the ECISD bond already, with new Promethean boards in the classroom and new bleachers. My first goal is for the transition for our students, community, teachers, staff to be as smooth as possible, transitioning from the charter back into the district. This is one of my main goals. Of course, academics, that charter did a great job, but I really want our students, our staff, and our community to feel supported and proud that Hector is back in the district. So that's my year one goal, Garcia said. The biggest community feedback is they're very excited for the electives and just being able to have the same extracurricular activities as the other middle schools, Garcia said. Garcia said it was emotional for her to leave Travis, but moving to Hector is going to be exciting for everyone and a chance to start fresh. Garcia, who is from Big Spring, earned a bachelor's degree in history from University of Texas Permian Basin and a master's in educational leadership as well. I'm currently working on my doctorate through Texas Tech, Garcia said. Her doctorate will be in educational leadership too. Garcia always wanted to be an educator. Even when I was younger, I would always tell my mom that I wanted to be a teacher, or when I would play, I would set up my dolls like a school teacher, and I would mimic my third grade teachers. I believe it was always in the cards for me, she added. Miss Garcia is an exceptional leader whose experiences in elementary and secondary will help lead Hector in the right direction. While she always puts students first, Miss Garcia believes in supporting staff and families. This will help build upon the culture of the Hector community, Anthony Garcia said. Anthony Ali Garcia poses for a photo at UTPB, her alma mater, for her bachelor's and master's degrees. Garcia has been named principal at Hector County Middle School and is getting ready for the new school year. This is Christy, and I'll be reading MRT for August 3rd, 2024. Modern oil field sets up many new jobs. Opportunities abound for interested young people, by Bob Campbell. B. Campbell at OAOA.com. The evolution of the energy industry has created a host of new jobs that require a lot of training and skills but are highly remunerative. That's according to the Permian Basin Petroleum and Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Associations, who say the industry is hardly recognizable from 40 to 50 years ago, except in as much as it still produces oil and natural gas. PBPA President Ben Shepard says technological innovation has impacted aspects of every job. So while there is still a high need for physical labor, that labor has evolved or has been supplemented by hardware and software improvements and breakthroughs, Shepard said. Computer engineers, programmers, and technicians are just some of the careers that were not part of your grandfather's oil field. Even the education needed for traditional career fields like petroleum engineering has evolved as computers and other equipment has developed to facilitate a more efficient and effective oil field. Over the last few years, there has also been an incredible increase in jobs that are specifically associated with air and emissions monitoring. Shepard said the industry offers a variety of jobs that require various training and education. Fortunately, our local academic institutions have worked hard to adjust the programs they offer, whether they are training programs, associate's degrees, bachelor's degrees, or advanced degrees, in nearly every every field in which the industry is looking for workers, he said. With over 100 years of production as proof, as technology evolves, the jobs needed to continue producing the natural resources of the Permian Basin will evolve as well. TIPRO President Ed Longenecker said the oil and natural gas industry is one of the most innovative sectors in the world, and jobs have evolved with new technologies being utilized. Automation technologies is a key area of growth from an employment standpoint that will drive operational efficiencies, safety, and profitability, Longenecker said from Austin. These applications and related technical positions will become more prevalent, supporting advancements in autonomous drilling operations, training, forecasting, and much more. Some of the top technical postings in the Texas upstream sector last month by title included technical professionals, leak detection and repair technicians, automation engineers, engineering managers, automation specialists, software engineers, and application engineers. These positions also demand healthy compensation, with a median advertised salary of $76,500 and 27% of advertised salaries being in the $115,000 to $163,000 range. Longenecker said another area of innovation is advanced water management. Operators in the Permian Basin are using new technologies as well as improving existing ones to make water recycling and reuse more common and cost-effective, he said. For example, innovation in water management practices and fracking fluid chemistry has allowed Texas operators to reuse millions of gallons of produced water, even those with very high salinity, up to 220,000 milligrams per liter of total dissolved liquids for fracking operations, dating back at least to the 1980s, he said. The oil and gas sector has turned to supercomputers to crunch vast amounts of data. More recently, major producers have unveiled some of the fastest supercomputers on Earth, such as British Petroleum's Center for High Performance Computing in Houston, or Eni's HPC4 supercomputer in Milan, Italy, which can process 100,000 reservoir models in just over 15 hours, he said. From smart PIGs to inspect the insides of pipelines and robotic tank inspectors to gas cloud imaging, drones, machine learning, and real-time communication across equipment through the Internet of Things, oil and gas companies are more advanced than some would think. Using these technologies, operators are able to increase production efficiency, reduce emissions, improve safety, and more accurately determine where resources are located. Religion. Parable of 10 virgins show need for preparation. Reverends Raleigh and Archie say Jesus' story, harbinger of the future. By Bob Campbell. B. Campbell at OAOA.com. Jesus told the parable of the 10 virgins in Matthew 25:1-13 to emphasize the necessity of preparing for his return. That's according to the Reverends Donnie Raleigh and Windsor Archie, who say the five foolish virgins who didn't bring oil for their lamps were shut out when the bridegroom arrived, while the five wise ones who had brought oil were admitted to the wedding banquet. We have to work with the gifts that have been given to us and that will allow others to be presented to Jesus Christ and show who he is, said the Reverend Rowley, pastor of Manna of the World Ministries. Whatever has been given to you, work it in obedience to Christ. We have to work the gift he has given. We have to work the gift he has given. Don't bury it or sit on it and do nothing. Raleigh said gifts are given to Christians like the abilities to speak, sing, or in other ways to serve, not to show how gifted we are, but to show the giver of the gift. It is not for us to get the hour and the glory of it. It is to turn people to Jesus. He said the five wise virgins show the wisdom of prayer. Ask what it is that God would have you do, Raleigh said. They heard the word of God and did what that word called them to do. We need to know what God has given us, walk in that, and be the light in the dark world, said the Reverend Archie, pastor of Rose of Sharon Missionary Baptist Church. Said the five wise virgins knew the bridegroom would eventually arrive, and they made preparations like people should prepare for Jesus' second coming. Citing Matthew 24:36, Archie said, "No man knows the day or the hour, Some are like the foolish virgins and have not made any preparations. That's what separates the wise from the foolish and the saints from the sinners. He said the most essential preparation is to obey God's word. The most important commands are to love the Lord, your God, with all your heart, all your soul, and all your mind, and all your strength, and to love your neighbor as yourself. Archie said, we will be prepared for Jesus' arrival whenever he shows up. If you don't love God, you can't love your neighbor. He said the mass shootings around the nation show that there is not much love in the world. It's the work of the devil, Archie said. He wants us to hate one another.
Life Tributes. Grant Michael Ausley. 10/22/2021 to 7/27/2024. It is with profound sadness that we announce the unexpected passing of our beloved son, Grant Michael Ausley, who left this world far too soon at the tender age of 2 on July 27, 2024. Grant made his grand arrival into this world on October 22, 2021, and was an instant bright light in our lives. Grant is survived by his loving parents, Shane and Jennifer, who cherished every moment with their precious boy. He will also sorely be missed by his big sisters, Sophia Page and Ava Hope, who will always remember him as the fastest, smartest, and funniest baby that they loved playing tag with. Grandparents Charlie and Nancy Ausley, Janet and Mont Reinhardt, and Craig and Kelly Foster, as well as numerous aunts, uncles, cousins, and an abundance of friends, all of whom adored him deeply. Grant was warmly welcomed at Heaven's Gates by his grandparents Rebecca and Scott Richardson, John, Dadad, and Carla, Gran, Foster, and many more loving relatives and friends. The family will receive visitors on Sunday, August 4th, 2024, from 4 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. at the Branch at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home, 3800 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas. A celebration of life will be held on Monday, August 5th, 2024, at 11 o'clock a.m. at Stonegate Fellowship, 6000 West Wadley Avenue, Midland, Texas, with graveside service to immediately follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street, Midland, Texas. In honor of Grant's favorite color, the family would love everyone to wear their favorite shade of blue. In lieu of flowers, the family asks that donations be made to Little Ladders Christian Center, 1708 North Fort Worth Street, Midland, Texas, 79701, to help fund a new slide for the playground in memory of Grant. Pallbearers will be Ethan Hammonds, Chris Foster, Aaron Brooks, Greg Wells, Charlie Troxel, Baltazar Martinez, and Daniel Watson. Honorary pallbearers will be all of Grant's CA Electric family. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Shirley Jean Irwin, 4/8/1935 to 7/31/2024. Shirley Jean Irwin departed this life early on the morning of July 31, 2024. All are invited to a celebration of her long, fulfilling life on Tuesday, August 6, 2024, at 11 o'clock at First United Methodist Church Chapel, Midland, Texas. The family will welcome friends immediately following the service at a reception given in her honor. Jean was born to Marie and Buck Jackson on April 8, 1935 in Pecos, Texas. Jean is survived by her children, Jack Irwin and wife Lavonda, Chet Irwin and wife Lisa, Doug Irwin and wife Christy, six grandchildren, Hannah Irwin and husband Alex, Luke Irwin, Andrew Irwin and wife Nicole, Chris Irwin, Haley Carson, and Mackenzie Cole. She had four great-grandchildren, Charlie Irwin, Harper Briggs, Jackson Irwin, and Levi Irwin. She is also survived by her sister, Patsy Bowles of Midland, who visited her at Manor Park every day, sometimes multiple times a day, and many nieces and nephews. She was preceded in death by her parents, her brother, Arthur Bubba Jackson, and her husband, Ron. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Richard Harry Wallace, 8/3/1942 to 7/29/2024. Richard Harry Wallace, 81, was called home on July 29, 2024 in Midland, Texas. He is preceded in death by his parents, Jack and Sybil Wallace, and beloved wife, Frances Vitale Wallace. Richard is survived by his sister, Kathleen Humphrey, daughter, Angela Wallace Beasley, and husband, Larry, son, William Wallace, grandchildren, Nicole Jarvis and husband, Jesse, Alicia Beasley, Daniel Wallace, and Sheree Wallace, great-grandchild, Alora Jarvis, along with his cherished nieces, great-nieces, and nephews, and great-great-nieces and nephews. Graveside services will be held in Midland, Texas at Rest Haven Memorial Park, 4616 North Big Spring Street, at 11 o'clock on Tuesday, August 6th. Sandra Ginger Elwood. Sandra Ginger Elwood, 83, of Midland, passed away Thursday, August 1st, 2024. Arrangements are pending with Ellis Funeral Home. Robert M. Tipps. Robert M. Tipps, 81, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, July 30th, 2024. The family will be holding a memorial service 2 o'clock p.m. Wednesday, August 7th, 2024, at Bellevue Baptist Church. Cremation arrangements were handled by Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory in Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com.
This article is entitled, Seven Questions with IDEA Public Schools Regional Executive Director, by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Annette Macias was recently named the Executive Director of IDEA Public Schools in the Permian Basin region. Macias steps into the role with 28 years of experience in education. She has a PhD in Educational Leadership Policy from Texas Tech University. As Executive Director, Macias will oversee day-to-day operations, academic achievement, and develop strategies to enhance the region. Macias said that she will also help families and students achieve the ultimate goal, receiving a college education. I see it as helping us achieve our mission of having 100% of our students get to and through college, Macias said. My role here as the executive director is to help families and students realize their ultimate potential. Macias started her role this month and has been busy preparing for the first day of school. The Reporter-Telegram sat down with Macias to ask her seven questions to learn more about her role. Question: How do you feel about returning to the Permian Basin? I'm excited. I'm super pumped, especially about expanding to our third site that's going to be in my old neighborhood where I grew up in Odessa. I'm super excited to offer that to parents and students as another choice. Ultimately, my goal is for this district, for IDEA Public Schools, to be the district of choice for families and kids that want their children to go to and get through college. What drew me back was being able to expand to other areas in the Permian Basin. But ultimately, throughout my career, my educational career, I worked with economically disadvantaged students from when I started as a teacher until all the way up to where I was in Houston. The majority of the student populations that I've served are economically disadvantaged students. What drew me to IDEA and coming back to the Permian Basin was really the IDEA vision of nearly 100% of IDEA public school students attend college. They get to college, and that's so exciting to me, and I can't wait for us to have that initial graduating class this year. We're able to add ninth grade at UConn in Odessa. We're adding that first high school class. At Travis, we're up to 10th grade, so we're only a couple of years of having our first graduating class. I really can't wait. That's going to be an exciting time to just see how our students have been able to grow throughout this system. Question: What attracted you to education? I wanted to be a principal. I grew up in an immigrant family, not really knowing how to go enroll in college, or what to enroll in, or how to even become a principal. I just knew I loved going to school. I wanted to be an elementary school principal because I remember Mr. McCartney from my elementary years. That's what attracted me to education, but also seeing the importance that my parents stressed on getting an education and a college degree and how it can help me achieve greater things. I love learning. I'm a lifelong learner. Throughout my journey, my PhD, I just recently earned it, I've consistently continued to learn along the way. I feel like I've always been in college because I've never really left. And so I love to learn, and I want to instill that passion into our kids, our families, so that they're aware of what's available to them. Question: how has your experience helped you prepare for this role? I've served in many, many, many roles. My experience, I think, first and foremost, as a teacher and as a principal, has helped me the most in filling this role here in the Permian Basin. Our focus is on really providing the best instruction every day, all day long, to our students. We are determined to invest in our teachers, our leaders, so that we can achieve and have that success with our students. Question: what goals do you have for your first year in this role? My goals for this year are for us to be able to grow our leaders and our students to a level that we accomplish our five goals. Our five goals are around student persistence. We want our families and our students to come back from year to year. We don't want a huge turnover in our students. We want to welcome our students and be able to keep our students in IDEA public schools. Another goal we have is staff retention. We want our teachers and leaders, our cafeteria workers, our bus drivers, to feel so valued that they want to continue to come back year after year. And so, ultimately, that's what by the end of this year we would like to achieve, is that we are increasing the number of high-quality seats by providing good professional development and investing in our leaders and teachers, and also to see that growth and success in our students. Question: what have you been doing to prepare for the first day of school? We've been working a lot behind the scenes. I have a phenomenal team here at IDEA Public Schools, our regional team. They've been hard at work since before we had the beginning of the year. Back to school, professional development. Investing in others is something that IDEA firmly believes in. I align with that core value, and since the day that I arrived at IDEA Public Schools, we've been working on both developing leaders here at the regional level, to the campus level, and down to the teacher level. This week, we're going to work with our families to help onboard them and teach them the importance of getting back to school, getting back to routines and procedures, so that we can get on with the learning. Question: if you could tell your future self something, exactly 1 year from now, what would you say? Congratulations. Congratulations to the team for the success that they've achieved, for meeting the goals and the growth that we set out to achieve. Question: is there anything you want to add? I just want to reiterate that it's important that we partner with our families. It's important that our families know and understand that IDEA Public Schools is not just an elementary school or a middle school. We hone in at the high school level. Although we are not there yet, although we don't have a full high school yet, the best is yet to come. Once we start graduating our seniors, we're going to see the fruits of the labor. I just want you to know, the Permian Basin to know, that we are continuing to add those high school grade levels, and we want to help our students get to and through college. This is the Dear Abby column. Online romance prompts existential questions. Dear Abby, I met a man from another country through the internet last year. In the beginning, we talked every day via video chat. We share much in common. We never have a problem keeping our conversations going, and we pick up on each other's emotions and needs without even trying. Our communication is less frequent now that our relationship is maturing. With this newfound freedom from the phone, I'm starting to question how wise it is to continue pursuing a future together. Although we have never met in person, I feel he is trustworthy and absolutely wonderful, and I would even go so far as to say he's my soulmate. The questions that are always in the back of my mind, though, are, am I crazy for thinking this is the real deal? Is it too good to be true? And if I don't pursue this further, am I missing my only opportunity for a lasting love? Signed, Matched in Michigan. Dear Matched, this is not your only opportunity for lasting love. Whether this is the real deal or too good to be true remains to be seen. Because you found this match online, you need to be cautious. If it's possible, arrange to visit him in his country, which will give you the opportunity to meet his family and friends and observe his living situation. If he is genuine, he should welcome it. If he is hesitant, however, regard it as a significant red flag. Dear Abby, my older sister and I are educated professionals in our late 40s. We reside in different states. Our father's cognitive function and mobility are deteriorating, so my parents sold their large home in another state to downsize and move to a senior community near me. The area in which I live is affordable. Living near me is a logical choice, since I am attentive and reliable, and I have often assisted them and my in-laws in the past. My sister has chosen to view my parents' move as their choosing me over her. Initially, she stopped speaking to me. When I texted and asked why I hadn't heard from her, she said my texts, quote, weren't high on her list of priorities, unquote. In another exchange, she told me she hoped my husband, who is being treated for a heart condition, dies before he can vote. Then she stopped speaking to our parents. During their last email exchange, she told my mother to cry on the shoulder of the, quote, daughter she chose, unquote. My sister has treated me similarly in the past, but she has never before shut out our parents. She used to call them often, and they miss talking to her. I'm not sure reconciling is an option, but it is difficult to witness her being so cruel during this time of extreme stress. What are your thoughts? Signed, Sibling Drama in Georgia. Dear Drama, your sister's attempts to punish you and your parents for the decision they made has only reinforced that they made the correct one. I am sorry she has been so successful in inflicting pain on all of you, because none of you deserve her over-the-top reaction. By shunning you, she has succeeded only in isolating herself from those who care for her. You can contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.